deep, fat fried.
Whoa. It's enough of that, TJ.
All right, sorry.
That'll do, TJ. That'll do.
So, I have proof positive of aliens sitting right here.
All right.
What?
Yep. All these people that are always bitching about how, like, you know, people find these UFO videos, but they're all shaky and indeterminate. Dude, I found the one.
Cool.
I'm going to send it to you, TJ.
All right.
We can take a look.
Send it on over.
It's the final alien video.
I'll do it when I get a chance here. Let me see. Paste. There we go. Okay.
At your leisure.
Damn.
There you go.
What the fuck, dude? I'm seeing a video.
All right. Hold on.
Ready to see the slideshow.
Yeah, for us, unfortunately, it'll be a slideshow. You can click on it and watch it yourself, though, Scotty.
Yeah, I'll send you my USB connection, which would kill the audio for you guys.
Or just mute the video.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
So let's go ahead.
There's no sound on the video that's worth listening to anyway.
All right, I'll mute it then.
See? So this guy's got like some big telescopic lens, obviously. He's able to get a good shot of the moon's surface.
Right.
There's and the pretty early on, you'll see some very strange things start to happen.
I'm seeing it now.
Yeah, you see? Now watch as it passes over the surface of the moon.
Whoa. Whoa.
Aliens. Whoa. What the fuck?
There they are.
I told you.
They're going to the dark side of the moon, just like Transformers told us they would.
There's some shit going on that we all need to fucking think about. Look at this shit. There's a little enhanced version here. So look at the shadows passing across the face of the moon. These things are huge. They're casting gigantic shadows. No explanation for what these things are. I mean, tell me that doesn't prove it.
I mean, I no longer have any doubt in the authenticity. I mean, I never did. I mean, I've been trying to convince you guys for a long time.
Convince me?
Yeah.
I'm the only one here that's had a close encounter of the third kind.
Yeah, but you still don't believe. You're that fucking retardedly skeptical.
Tell me what I believe and don't believe, TJ.
Well, you know, we've done episodes about it, and you've explicitly stated, like, that's a bunch of hooey. That's a bunch
there
of...
there is a lot of hooey out there.
Hibbity-jibbity. But you know what? It was aliens at Roswell. Every fucking alien abduction story you've ever heard, no matter how absurd or ridiculous, is true. You know, and that's just one more fucking UFO video. Can't be explained. I mean,
It can be explained.
There's only one explanation that makes sense. These are alien spacecraft.
Well, the Navy has even said you guys have probably seen it. There's the UFO sighting that the F-15 or whatever, they saw it and they can't explain it. Like, the objects stopped, accelerated, did shit in a way that's beyond our technology to do.
No one knows
what it is. I mean, that's literally just something that the Navy even admitted. Like, oh, we don't really know. No one really knows what these things are.
No clue.
Yeah, no one has any idea. So it's not as entirely far-fetched as people believe. Like, a lot of people believe it's the fucking people, like, they're going outside and, like, look at the sky. Like, what's that? That could be a UFO. So we're not talking about those retards. There's, like, legitimate evidence of shit that no one can explain. Like, these objects have been seen. Like, I think we watched some of the videos before.
Yeah, but, you know. I think that you guys just want to live in this little bubble of doubt. It's like, oh, I don't believe. But you know what? It's all real. Every last fucking stinking account.
Every one of them.
Even if you watch a video of like a paper plate on a fucking string, that's legit. That's a fucking UFO. You need to just accept that.
Movies, are those legit too?
Yes.
They'll just realize they're actually just filming real life.
Yeah, these fucking Hollywood producers are all fucking in with the aliens, man.
That makes sense.
So they just fucking, whenever they need to fucking UFO for their movie, you think they want to spend all that money on fucking CGI? And they can just get a real alien to show up and fly a fucking spaceship around for a minute.
And people can believe, oh, it's just a movie. It's fake.
Oh, wow. Actually, great special effects. In fact, people will be, I've even been there in these movie theaters, you know, watching these fucking alien ships, and people in there are like, man, that CG looks totally fake. And little do they know, you know, they're looking at a real alien fucking spacecraft. That's how fucking witless these people are.
They're a bunch of sheep, TJ. You know that. I know that. Everyone here knows that.
Yeah. I mean, obviously. 100%.
100% sheep?
Yeah.
How about 200% sheep?
3,000% sheep, dude.
9,000% sheep.
6.8 million% sheep, Scotty.
Infinity percent sheep, TJ. Top that.
Infinity times 10% sheep, Scotty.
Infinity times 10% plus one, TJ.
Whoa. All right, I can't top that.
Didn't think about that, did you?
That's the tippy top.
I watched a couple of movies recently. Mm. I watched The Stranger, which is like this 1940s movie with Orson Welles. He directed and starred in it. And it's about a secret Nazi that like comes to the United States and assumes a United States identity.
Yeah.
And then this dude is chasing him, you know what I mean? Trying to track down who the Nazi is and stuff. And it really underscored how fucking weird and boring life must have been back in that, in those times. You know what I mean? Because it was a movie that was made, you know, in present time.
Right.
And there were some things that people did that I was just like, man, thank goodness I was born when I was born. Have you guys ever heard of a paper chase?
Uh-uh.
Mm-mm.
So this is apparently something people in the 40s used to do. You would take a bunch of newspaper and shred it up.
Right.
Right. And then put it into a satchel. And you're given a head start. You run out into the woods. And the only rule is you have to leave like a trail of this newspaper where you go. So you're like trying to evade the group of people behind you by a minute or whatever, but you have to leave a trail.
Yeah.
And that's the people would do this. Like one dude running around, scooping handfuls of paper out of a satchel and throwing it on the ground and trying to, you know, be elusive. And then a group of people going, oh, look, there's some newspaper over here, but the wind this way. Come on, guys.
Oh my God, sounds horrible.
I'd never heard of such a thing. They also played a lot of checkers, apparently, and took it very seriously. Like, checkers was like something that you played at the corner store. You know what I mean? You'd go in there, and the dude that owned the corner store would like be like, hey, want a game of checkers? It's like, oh my God, no. No, I don't.
Why not, Paul?
What do you mean, why not? Why do I have to explain why checkers sucks?
Why are you so anti-checkers? Are you bad at it?
I mean, everybody's bad at it. It's a stupid fucking game.
It's not stupid, Paul.
Yeah, it is.
I'll play you in checkers right now, bitch.
Right. Bring it up.
I'll dominate you.
Bring up some online checkers and I'll fucking kill you.
See, I knew it. I was just trying to expose you as the checker lover that you really are.
I'm not.
I would never play checkers, Paul. Checkers is a fucking absurdly boring game.
You guys ever liked a board game other than chess? I don't really count chess.
Let me think. I feel like I've liked a board game here and there, but I don't know. I couldn't fucking tell you offhand. I guess I like Scrabble. I like Scrabble, all right.
I used to play Sorry a lot when I was a kid.
There's really no strategy involved in that, is there? I mean, that's just kind of like...
No,
it's roll the dice and move your piece, and whoever gets the luckiest roll wins.
Yeah, most like Candyland as a kid.
Just sheer luck.
I don't know. I liked Monopoly as a kid, but I didn't really understand the rules, and the game didn't really go how it was supposed to. So if I actually played it the correct way, I probably wouldn't enjoy it.
Monopoly's the fucking worst. Oh, my God. I hate Monopoly so much.
Yeah, we used to, like, just make up our own rules, though. So, you know, that game went totally different. I always remember, like, me and TJ would always just compete to get Boardwalk. That was, like, our only strategy. Like, I'm going to get Boardwalk. And whoever got it pretty much won the game.
Connect Four.
Oh,
there's a dumbass game, if ever there was one.
Have you ever been to one of these arcades that has the giant versions of it?
Yes.
Dude, I'm still playing fucking, dude, it's always great. I'll always be playing and some dumb kid will wander up and I'll just destroy them. It's like, dude, like it's fun if you want to beat 8-year-olds, but that's about it.
Yeah, it's pretty lame.
I mean, I kind of grew up in, when Nintendo was getting fucking big, like, me and TJ usually played Sega or fucking Super Nintendo. Like, board games are kind of like, who gives a fuck about these? Honestly, was never interested in me. If I had a game like Chrono Trigger or Earthbound where I could play fucking Sorry or Monopoly, I mean, like, that was something more like our parents would force us to do. Like,
let's all play Yahtzee.
So every day after school, I used to play chess. I did play that a lot growing up. It's probably why I can beat TJ and Stevie so easily. Oh my God, dude, watching you and Stevie play was just like, oh, you guys were just, you made so many dumb moves. Like, you could have fucking destroyed Stevie so many times. Stevie could have destroyed you so many times. I was like, just infuriated. I'm like, do this. But I'm sure that I look the same way to someone who's actually a good chess player.
You don't fucking, you just don't understand my fucking ultimate strategy.
Yeah, what's your ultimate strategy to lose? I mean, come on.
Hey, DJ. I'm playing the long game, Scotty. I'm playing the long game.
Why do your games end so quickly then?
That game ain't even over yet.
In defeat.
Stevie. All right, yeah. What I'm doing right now is lulling Stevie into a false sense of comfort and security. But when he least suspects it, bam, that's when I strike. Checkmate, Stevie. Check fucking mate, bitch.
Is it more effective if you actually win some of the games, though?
You would think.
What? We've only played one game, and I haven't lost yet. We're still playing. We're still playing. It's just what I wanted you and Stevie to think, that the game is over.
Oh, this is like some 4D chess shit, dude.
Yeah, you don't even understand. That's what I'm saying. You don't even understand the level of chess that I'm at, bitch.
He's won the game, but it's only won in one dimension. Well, I have won the other three.
Yeah, you got to. It's a matter of sacrifice, dude. You know, you sacrifice, you lose on the fucking, one-dimensional plane. I guess it'd be a two-dimensional plane. But you win on the three-dimensional plane and the four-dimensional plane and all the other planes above that.
Don't a load of shit, dude. You suck at chess.
Yeah, I'm terrible.
Oh, dude, I remember playing you last time. I forget what piece I had just, like, sitting there for fucking 15 moves or something. I'm just like, la, 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 la. And then TJ finally goes, woo, I'm going to take that one. I take your queen afterwards.
Yeah, you're a real jerk, Scotty.
You're a jerk, man. You're a real jerk, dude.
You're a real poo-poo head, Scotty.
So what have you guys been doing to keep yourselves sane?
I don't know. I've been watching movies. I've been cooking and watching movies and doing streams, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, minus the streams, and that's basically what I've been doing.
And another thing, too, is so this morning, Chelsea was like, there's piss all around the toilet, TJ. I'm like, okay. And she's like, why can't you fucking just piss in the toilet like a fucking normal human being? It's like
a big boy.
Yeah. And I was like, I don't know. And then I thought it was just over. And then 30 minutes later, she's like, are you going to clean that up? I'm like, you never asked me to. She's like, a nice person wouldn't need to be asked. I'm like, what does that have to do with me?
TJ and Chelsea are turning on each other in these dark times.
And then
you got to fucking do it with me.
And I'm like, fine, I'll go do it. I'll go clean it up. And I went in there. I didn't see a goddamn drop of piss anywhere in there. So I just, but of course I wiped down the area around just like hoping that I get whatever fucking invisible piss that she's concerned about, you know?
Dude, that reminds me of, it's like me and you live in the house in Mandeville. Like, remember the one we lived in before we moved to Ohio?
Yeah, yeah.
Our crazy landlord.
Yeah.
He would come and he'd be like,
ugh.
There's overgrowth. Overgrowth everywhere.
Guy was a nut.
Back. And then I literally took this machete and cut all this overgrowth back. I'm like, all right. Next day. Overgrowth everywhere still. We trimmed all this stuff back. Oh, that wasn't what I was talking about. I was talking about the other overgrowth over there. Cut it all back. A couple days later. More overgrowth. Too much overgrowth going on. And finally I just cut anything that could be considered overgrowth. And then he finally just shut the fuck up about it for a little while, then came back like another month later, like, overgrowth, too much overgrowth.
Yeah.
I don't know what you do with some people. It's like that. I mean, I'm not saying Chelsea's like that, but it's like when you get in those things, especially with like a spouse, it's like, what the fuck are you going to do? It's
that's
like,
one good thing about this. That's one good thing about this coronavirus shit is I feel like people have turned more against landlords than they were before.
Oh, yeah. I don't know why it took this.
Yeah. I don't either, but I'm glad that it happened nonetheless. I'm glad that I now see nonstop shit talked on landlords everywhere.
Except, I mean, there's been some good. I actually read one positive story about a landlord. He was a guy that waived all his tenants' rents in Brooklyn, New York. He's like a guy that owns like an auto shop and other things. He's a big time landlord. He owns like 18 buildings. And he just was like, yep, no one has to pay rent in April. I guess he's just probably just dealing with this probably the smartest way he can is like, well, if people can't pay it, what good is me trying to get blood from a stone? You know what I mean? It's like better to make it a positive spin. But his tenants even said he was like, you know, if there was a problem, he fixed this. He's one of those rare landlords in the world that, you know, actually gives a shit about the building and the people in it. You know, most of these people are just giant companies. Like Sean Hannity's a huge landlord owner. I mean, you know, obviously he makes lots of money with Fox News, but he owns a ton of these buildings and they're notorious for evicting people, you know, very quickly and not being understanding of, you know, the financial situation of the tenants.
I'm shocked.
Not fixing the buildings properly. Another big issue is like on these military bases, dude, like people in this country, like the tenant laws in this country are so in favor of the people renting or the government or whoever it is, you know, that should be held responsible. And they just live in substandard conditions with infestations. They're not willing to do nothing about. Basically, just fend for yourself. You know, they're talking about people. It's even talking about military people. People are serving in the military, veterans, you know, the elderly. I mean, it's just the laws in this country. It's astonishing that people wouldn't turn on these motherfuckers sooner.
I mean, it's not even the landlords that need to be turned on. It's the system by which you have to pay in order to exist on a little plot of land somewhere. That's what needs to be turned on. Fuck the rest of this. Like the landlords are just existing within the pre-established system. That sucks, by the way.
I agree with you. But I mean, like, you know, in the society we live in, you know, I don't think we're just going to wave a wand and suddenly people are going to say, well, you know what? I made this huge capital investment, but now I'm just going to give it up. I mean, like the only way that's going to happen is if people just simply refuse to participate in that system.
Bullshit. I think we got the wand. I want the wand, Scotty.
You got the wand?
Yeah, I got it.
Start waving it.
It's right here. I'm waving it now.
Break the fucking wheel, dude. I mean, to me, it's just terrible that, you know, and I've heard about people still being evicted, even though there's a moratorium on these evictions.
Well, that was what my last stream I did as of the recording of this was about this some of these calls that are happening right now for like a general strike, which you know, I was kind of like, I don't know, I don't know if that'll actually work in this country. I don't think it will. I mean, maybe it would. Fuck.
I mean, it depends, too, on who your landlord is. I mean, a lot of people rent from family members, you know, so
well, there,
might
not, what was
like,
being
might strike from those people.
What was, know, being talked not, about was like grocery workers striking, bus drivers striking, all these essential workers that we now see are super vital to like the infrastructure of this country and the economy, you know, yeah. Still even be going on, like all them going on strike. And then all of the people going on strike and saying, we're not paying our fucking credit card debts. We're not paying our student loan debts. We're not paying our rent. We're not paying our mortgage. Fuck you, basically.
Yeah, and what do you do then? What if every person in the country, or let's say 90% of them say, we're not going to do it? I mean, what are they going to do? They're going to throw everyone in jail. They're going to destroy credit, the credit market. They can't exist without those people.
Yeah, so that was like kind of like, should people do this? Is this an idea even worth taking seriously?
Dude, I read a great story about these 300 tenants in some building. I forget where it is. And they actually, the management sent everyone an email like, better pay your rent. But they're idiots, and they gave everyone in the building each other's email to exchange information. Now they're like, yeah, we're probably going to do a rent strike. So I was like,
thanks for putting that list together for us.
You guys see the Reddit post where the guy was on our legal advice or whatever, and he's all like, my tenants won't pay me. No. It's like, dude, you know, you only got really two options. Your option is to deal with the tenants and just try to work something out with them, which is probably your smartest option. Or option two is burn down the fucking building. Because if you ain't going to, either you have to go all the way and say, ain't no one going to live here, or you better work with these people. Now, I recommend working with the people and coming to a peaceful solution. But the only other solution, I was like, look, the only other solution I could say is you burn down the building, then there's no issue. I mean, obviously, you're going to go to jail and you could kill people. But beyond that, I don't see any other way to resolve it besides like or hiring armed thugs to go and beat them or kill them or something. Which I don't advocate. So it's like, you know, I think these landlords, you know, if you're one of these good landlords, maybe you could work some out with people. Maybe you could have some understanding. You know, people that need help, you'd help them. Maybe the ones that maybe some of them are better off, you could work with them. But if you're just like, hey, pay us the fucking money, you know, people don't have the money. What are they supposed to do? They don't want to be homeless. You know, what the fuck do you expect of them? And that's why, you know, Paul, I kind of feel your position. It's like, you know, pushing people to basically be indentured servants or slaves to these people. And like, it's hard to feel any empathy for someone. I mean, like maybe it's possible to feel empathy for someone that just owns one other building. This isn't their main source of income. And it's just, okay, I'm renting this out to a person, but some giant company that has 7 million fucking square feet of space they're leasing out. Like, I don't feel sorry for them.
You guys heard of these crazy fucks that are going around like burning down all the 5G towers and shit?
Are they?
Yeah. Apparently there's been some rumors that the coronavirus is caused by 5G.
I've heard that.
Yeah. So some people have actually like started like going around like burning these towers down and shit. Like, fuck you, 5G tower. Burn.
Wow.
There've been it seems like it's mostly a European thing right now. Like I know there was some in like Liverpool and like some of those other British fucking shit, like Birmingham and shit.
The British shit, Birmingham,
you know,
Liverpool, Worcestershire sauce.
Yeah, but seriously though, they're burning them down though, like these crazy people, and there's like celebrities and shit on Twitter, telling people to burn them down and shit, like this is what's causing it, burn, and people are just like, yeah, we're safe, like they think they're doing something positive. Shit, they're just like, yeah, burn it.
Well, the psychology behind that is because those people feel helpless.
And part of the reason is that they're like, oh, well, you notice there's not that many coronavirus cases in Africa. And that's because, you know, they don't have 5G there, you know?
There's plenty of cases there. They're just not testing.
Right. But then, you know, we're talking about idiots here.
Well, yeah. I mean, idiots are not going to make even if you point that out to idiots, even if you showed them 100% proof of that, they would still just go, nope, ain't no 5G. And totally forego all that, those buried line infrastructure in favor of things like 4G and 5G. And actually, a lot of their banking and stuff is done through mobile devices.
Yeah, so well,
there's no water.
They're going to be regretting that when they fucking all got coronavirus from the 5G.
Ebola virus and malaria and all those other horrible diseases. So, you know, not really a good argument.
Yeah, well, 5G causes coronavirus. Everyone knows that, Scotty.
Everyone? Okay.
Everyone fucking knows.
Right.
Well, this whole general strike thing, like maybe people will wake up to the fact that we've been living under the illusion of being a powerless caste of people, but we really hold the keys. Like not the giant rich people, not the politicians, not the influencers, your average American in solidarity with other ones. Like, if we want to shut this shit down, if enough people do it, it's shut down.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
And maybe at the very least, this will remind people of that fact.
Yeah,
instead
I mean,
of this, like, fucking ridiculous belief that we're all somehow subservient to this upper class of people.
Yeah, I mean, they've had their way for quite some time now. I mean,
well, have you guys seen the thing about Instacart striking?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of how this came about is, you know, there's all these little disparate strikes going on right now. They have, you know, there's numerous renter strikes going on. There's numerous, like there's some in some cities, like most of these strikes are kind of isolated right now. But there's a rash of strikes going on across the country. Fast food workers on strike, bus drivers on strike, you know, people don't going on strike to not pay their rent. People going on strike to for college tuition stuff. So there's all these little strikes going on, and some you know, grocery stores. Obviously, we know how important grocery stores are right now. I mean, obviously, they always are, but, you know, to an even greater extent at the moment.
Remember when the first version of that stimulus Amazon package for coronavirus didn't even include gig workers, which now make up an increasingly large percentage of the population, people that work jobs like Uber, right. They work with these apps, essentially. They work with these companies, these tech companies based in, you know, the West Coast or East Coast, and they weren't even going to get any unemployment.
Right.
So they're going to be out of a job or it's going to be dangerous for them to work, and they get jack shit. Meanwhile, an airline is going to get fucking huge bailouts. The postal system, a vital system that delivers tons of prescriptions and other important medicines to people, is on the brink of insolvency. Right. I mean, you know, we're bailing out companies for hundreds of billions of dollars, if not trillions of dollars, on the line for like, what, $4.5 trillion to these companies potentially? Just another massive bailout for them. Whereas people are under fucking threat of losing their homes. It's like, you know, I'm glad people are striking. I mean, what else can they fucking do? They've been pushed to the brink here. Many people have been pushed, like 6.6 million people filed for unemployment in the last week or something, or last month. I'm not sure what that figure is, but it's like, that's an astonishing number. I mean, we're looking at our economy nosediving 20 or 30%.
And right now, strangely enough, probably the big advocate of the general strike, at least in terms of like any sort of like name recognition kind of person, would be Jimmy Dore.
Oh yeah.
Who's basically calling on, he's basically made some like firebrand kind of videos saying to Bernie Sanders, basically, Bernie Sanders, you are a pussy. You need to use this infrastructure and this campaign. You've already lost this fucking race, so you might as well do something and use this campaign infrastructure you've created to call for a fucking general strike, which, of course, we all know Bernie Sanders is never going to do.
Jimmy Dore actually interviewed the guy. Remember, we talked about that story about on Flash Friday, the Amazon guy that got fired for striking.
Right.
He should interview with him.
Yeah, that guy, he's I mean, but that's just one. There's more than one Amazon strike going on right now. There was an Instacart strike. I mean, there's tons of strikes going on, but none of them and underneath all of these little strikes, there's kind of the rumblings of like, should there be a big unified like countrywide kind of strike?
Mass
strike basically. It makes sense that people are talking in these terms because I mean, when have you ever seen the establishment weaker than it is right now? I mean, it's about as weak as it's ever going to fucking get, at least, you know, in any sort of foreseeable fucking circumstance.
Have you been reading about the GOP is like, and the Democratic Party, they're both fucking like terrified right now. Like, oh my fucking God, because shit like this is happening. And they're seeing that like their grasp on power is very tenuous right now. I mean, especially the Republican Party. I mean, with Donald Trump's not, I mean, look, Donald Trump should have ordered a nationwide lockdown months ago. He should have used the Defense Production Act to start making ventilators.
Absolutely.
PPE months ago. He had all this lead time. When the stockpile was used for the H1N1 crisis, it was never replenished. Under the Obama administration that happened, they never replenished the stockpile. So, I mean, all the stuff we could have done to prepare years and years ago was done in favor of giving corporate bailouts and giving more money to these people who are now just telling us, well, you got to pay your rent and you got to go to work and you got to do all this stuff. And it's like, what's the incentive for these people? They're essentially risking their lives to do a fucking menial job. That's a hard proposition to give someone. Like, keep doing this. Keep being stuck in this shitty fucking deal for you. Oh, you don't get your health care, by the way. You're not going to get that paid for.
But how come I keep seeing polls that are saying that people approve of Trump's handling of the crisis? You know, like, are there just a shit ton of people just still walking around in a fucking fog of bullshit where they just can't, like, they can't fucking admit to themselves this has not been handled well?
Yes.
Horribly.
I mean, that's a byproduct of our fucking system of politics being reduced to a football game. It's like you root for your team. You know what I mean?
No matter what.
You've forgotten that your team is you and your neighbors and everybody else that's a normal fucking working human being.
Exactly.
And you put all your faith and trust into these authorities because you're too uneducated to come up with any ideas on your own. and these authorities are all in the pockets of big multinational corporations. I mean, this is the end result of that. Nobody gives a fuck anymore. There's no help for you. And, you know, whether or not we realize that or we just tear ourselves apart with it, I don't know.
I mean, if you look over at, if you look over here at like 538 or some shit, you see, if anything, like Trump's disapproval is down and his approval's up. And I mean, like, this is literally like, this is the opposite of his finest hour. This is his lowest, this should be his low point. This should be the point where people are like turning on him like never before.
People are afraid. They're scared. Yeah, they don't. There's no certainty.
Strong man, save us, strong man. We don't care how fucking fake of a strong man you are. Please save us.
Think about it. Because if the emperor has no clothes, then we've all been stupid. Like and who do we turn to? We've handed over all the trust in society to these basically rotating dictators. And if that has been a mistake, then what have we invested ourselves in all these fucking years? And where do we turn from there?
Yeah, a lot of uncertainty. And people don't like that. It's hard for people to look at that and go, well, time for a major shift or change. It's just easier to go, well, nope, everything's great. You know, Trump's going to get this figured out. You know, people might die. You know, well, the goalpost constantly gets moved. At first it was, oh, it's going to be down to nothing. Then, oh, some people might die. And that's why I think early on you saw, like, there could be millions of deaths. Oh, there could be 10 million deaths. You know, they're crazy numbers. And it's like, oh, only 100 to 200,000 are going to die. Because that seems like good news. It's, you know, it's like 1984. It's like the chocolate ration gets reduced. But it's actually good news because the way they write about it, the chocolate ration has been increased. You know, people want to believe whatever they want to believe. Ultimately, that's up to them. If they want to believe the sky is fucking purple, they'll believe it. As long as it gives them that measure of comfort that they seek, they're going to do it. And we've just seen, that's what you see if those poll numbers are rising. That's probably what the psychological impact is that you're looking at someone like Trump and going, he's not incompetent. No one could have predicted this. No one could have been prepared for this. You know, there's always an excuse you can make, but it's like, actually, all those things are untrue and they've been demonstrated to be untrue. But people aren't looking for that. They're looking for the confirmation bias that everything's going to be okay. Because that's what everyone wants to believe. That's why you hear a lot of people saying, when things are going to get back to the way they was, when, you know, it's like people crave what they know. They crave to have that normal life that they think is like, this is how things should be. And that's all and that's what a lot of people are yearning for. But the reality is how can we ever go back to that? I mean, can we? It's like, look at the Black Death or other pandemics that have swept through the lands before. Not even just the major ones like that. It's always left a mark. It's always going to change the way people feel about society. You don't think there's going to be people that even, let's say there's a vaccine 18 months from now, the coronavirus is no big deal. You don't think people are still going to be paranoid about going to large crowds?
Oh, of course they will.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, there's something like this doesn't leave. I mean, it's going to leave a fucking psychological scar, and of course, it's going to leave a sociological scar as well. And I mean, like, I think one of the big things that it's done is, you know, it's just reaffirmed for probably the fucking. I'm fucking 35 years old.
You're old.
I've seen in that little fucking window of time that fucking tiny sliver of the history of America. I guess it's not a sliver because America is a pretty young country, but it just in that brief window, though, I've seen us bail out these fucking corporate cocksuckers twice already. I mean, like, I've seen it happen twice where the American taxpayers in our time of need are called upon to bail out the fucking wealthy elite who already have all the fucking money and all the fucking power. I've seen it happen twice now, like with like no. Barely any discussion, no repercussions, no fucking consequences. And, you know, I mean, I just feel like right now people who, you know, for years have been fucking told that they're, you know, low-skilled workers, low skill. It's like now all of a sudden you are so essential. We need you. It's like, okay, well, we need them, so maybe we should, like, pay them and take care of them and make sure they got fucking like paid sick leave and they can fucking support a family doing the job that they do and all that other bullshit, right?
You know, like, in addition to that, not just paying them, because a lot of the problem, I mean, yeah, dude, a lot of the problem for these low skilled workers is that they don't get paid what they're worth. But there's all kinds of other systemic problems that just throwing money at it isn't going to fix.
Sure.
What about the exposure these people have to toxic chemicals? What about the damage that's done to these people's bodies?
Right.
Like,
so
I don't mean to, you know, fucking digress into personal anecdotes and shit.
Do it all you want.
But my mom is a person that worked at a factory her entire fucking life, her entire working life. 40 years, or close to 40 years. She retired, I think, at 38 years or 36 years. That's her. That's your entire working life right there. You start work, you know, most people like she did, around 19 or 20. And you work until you're in your mid-50s if you're lucky, early 60s if you're not. And that's it. You got about 40 years in there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And she spent every day at a place that was literally soul breaking and back breaking, lifting shit on your feet all fucking day, asked to do things you're not trained to do, asked to work in environments that are incredibly my mom has an insane fucking story that it's almost beggar's belief, because it sounds like something that would happen back in the fucking 20s or 30s when there was really, you know, no oversight into the safety of people.
Yeah,
but we've got faith in this system that OSHA and federal and state level regulations have made these places safe to work. And it's just not fucking true. Mm-mm. Dude, listen to this story. So my mom worked at a glass plant, made beer bottles and wine bottles and shit. They got these two huge furnaces, and I've looked into these. It's actually kind of cool. You put on a special set of glasses because it's so bright, you can't see anything. And there's a little viewport, and you can look, and it's like a volcano. It's like the inside of a volcano. It's just a giant vat of molten glass that's constantly fed at the right temperature into the factory below it, right? Well, sometimes shit happens. Sometimes a production run gets interrupted, and you can't keep glass infinitely molten. You've got to add new product to it. So, you know, shit will get shut down below, and that glass has to go somewhere. Well, at this particular glass plant, the glass would be piped into the basement, okay, into these giant vats. Now, of course, a vat eventually gets filled. So somebody's got to take the vat out of the fucking basement. And this basement, by the way, don't picture a modern basement. Don't picture like well-lit areas and safety. Picture a literal concrete torture basement where the only light is the glow of the molten glass dropping from the ceiling, okay? One of my mom's jobs was to drive a forklift down into that basement and take these bins and swap them out, so, and then go empty the ones so that they could be refed back into the machine.
Sounds dangerous as fuck.
She's doing that one day. There's this long, steep ramp that you go down into this basement. The grade on it is probably outside of federal regulation. It's super steep. She's driving a forklift down that. At the very end of this, there's a concrete wall. And if you take a left turn, you're, you know, 10 or 15 feet from a giant vat of molten glass. About a quarter of the way down the ramp, the brakes on her forklift fail. Because once again, proper maintenance wasn't being done on it. It was just being left to rot. Because who cares about my mom? Who cares about the people that have to drive that thing down a fucking greater than 45 degree angle into a molten death machine? Brakes go out. My mom, you know, knows she can't turn left because that means falling into the lava. She can't turn right because it's a solid wall. There's a ramp ahead of her. So she waits until the very last second and dives out of this thing, breaks a bunch of bones. It flings her around. And now she's in this basement. Now think about this. She's in this basement. Yeah, there are people that know that she's doing it, but she's not going to be missed for 45 minutes. She's hurt. And the only light where she's at is the molten glow of death coming down in several places from the fucking top. And she had to crawl up that fucking ramp before somebody came to check on her. She crawled up the entire ramp with her legs all mashed to shit. And that's just one person in one of these places that employed a couple thousand people in that town.
Right.
So that is another thing that has to be addressed. People think we've come a lot further than we have when it comes to the safety of people. Like even fast food workers are exposed to danger.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're fucking handling like hot grease and, you know, I mean, like that grease is usually that's probably the biggest threat there. But I mean, there's slippery floors, you know.
There's toxic chemicals.
Yeah, there's toxic cleaning chemicals and stuff like that.
Not only that, but just the shit that, like, inhaling the smoke that comes off of a burger all day. It might be nice to, like, lean over the barbecue and go, yeah, man, that smells good.
Yeah, think but all day is not.
Somebody holding your face over that for fucking 8 or 10 hours a day.
Right.
Think about the long hours on their feet.
So according to this, 5,250 workers died on the job in 2018. On average, more than 100 a week or 14 deaths every day.
It's fucking insane.
I mean, think about that. 14 deaths every fucking day. So that's just like in normal times. Then you compact that with a pandemic. I mean, that's just, it's insane. And, you know, you're right. I mean, you talk about these, and that's just deaths. That's not people being injured. Like, your mom didn't die. I mean, thank God.
Yeah, for everybody for everyone who dies, you got to assume there's tons more who are injured.
Yeah, it's just crazy, you know, and your mom is just an example of how maintain it. They didn't give a shit. She was just, and the view of that company, expendable.
And most of them are doing this work for fucking peanuts. And look what happens. Look what happens to the entire economy when they don't do those jobs.
It falls apart.
So, I mean, like, if what's going on now is in any way a wake-up call for this fucking sleepy-ass country, it should probably be that. I know that there's certain other things that we're probably not going to wake up to, especially, like, I don't think we're ever going to wake up to climate change until it's fucking the 11th hour and way too fucking late, which it pretty much already is. But dude, maybe we could at least wake up to this.
Like, I wish I had a more optimistic take on what's going to happen after this virus, but I kind of know what's going to happen after this virus because you know what, dude? I've been through an existential crisis that I would at least compare to this, and so have you guys. In a certain capacity, you guys were younger than I was. 9/11.
Right.
Now, I'm not saying that is the same as COVID-19.
Yeah.
But I am saying that it was one of these times where people were having conversations like we're having right now, where it's like, what is existentially, where do we go as a country after this?
Right.
You know what I mean? And what happened? Things on the balance, if you look, if you're a person who cares about freedom of speech,
worse,
or the constitutionally protected right to privacy in your own home.
Yeah, that's all gone.
That went away. Shit, the dollar continued to devalue and inflation continued up since then. So,
and the foreign
milk costs more, but wages are stagnant.
Not only did our foreign policy that we, you know, should have really been taking a good hard look at that point, not only did it become, if anything, more aggressive, but anybody who told the truth about it, anybody who came out and like Reverend Jeremiah Wright and said, you know, America's chickens are coming home to roost, that was treated like, oh my God, you hate America and you're
right
against us and you're with the enemy.
Because it doesn't acknowledge the idea behind that.
Because of course, America can't fucking, we can't, I mean, there's just no, we're the good guys. We can't accept any fucking blame or responsibility for what we've done.
Well, doesn't it depend on who's telling the story? You know, of course, you take the true blood of America. Oh, yeah, we're the greatest country on earth. Let me tell you why, because we're so free and blah, 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 blah. But right now, it just sounds like a fucking mantra that people are telling themselves. And increasingly, you see how fragile the House of Cards are. You know, like all these other countries, they have universal health care to fall back on. We don't have that. Paid sick leave. We don't have that. They had to basically pass a special law that said, okay, if you get COVID-19, you can take sick leave, and only in certain cases. And only, there's a bunch of course, caveats to that. It's not universal. We need these universal programs yesterday, not fucking yesterday. We need them fucking 10 years ago. We need them decades ago. It's yet again, the reactive versus being proactive. This country is great at being reactive. It's horrible about being proactive. And that's why, you know, ultimately, I think Paul is right, because when people feel safe again, then they'll just go back to complacency. They won't be proactive. They won't say.
Not only that, but we'll likely give up. some of the modicums of freedom that we have now.
For safety, yeah, of course.
Yeah, this will be used as an excuse to further invade our privacy. And that's the best we can hope for at the end of this. That's literally like if things are able to go back to normal.
Well, the government just got smart on privacy issues. They at first it was, you know, we have things like the Patriot Act, of course, which are horrible laws. But it was also, hey, wait a minute. People use these devices. They voluntarily give this information to these companies. We just built the back door of these companies. We get all the we get all the data without ever really having to change any major laws. And that's the insidious thing about how they do bulk collection now. You know, it's like they don't even have to get, the government doesn't even have to pass some sweeping law of like, ooh, we're going to come and do this boogie boogie shit to you. It's like, okay, you have Facebook, you got TikTok, you have these things. Oh, by the way, we pull the executives of those companies into a meeting, you know, with the FBI and the NSA and all these terrorist organizations and go, well, look, this could be used for terrorism. This could be used for this and this, that. We're going to give you security clearance. We're going to scare the shit out of these tech executives that don't know what the fuck they're talking about. We're going to scare them really bad and say, now you have to give us a back door. And if you don't, we're going to take it anyways. So that's like, do you want to be a collaborator or do you want to be shut down? Because the companies that refused to give back doors to the government had to be shut down. They got shut down by the government. There was like, it was like an email company. It was like this, it was based on like privacy. I forget the name of it. But it was years like basically where you'd go if you want, like, you know, didn't want to be tracked and use email, and they had to shut down because the federal government's like, if you don't shut down, we're going to indict you. Like, simple enough. Like, the reason like these services are allowed to exist like Gmail is because they're spying on you. You know, that's the only reason that they're allowed to do business. You have to be basically, one of the things now with these tech companies is you have to be in bed with the U.S. government or other governments and share any information you find with them if they so choose to need it. That's why, you know, you've had these terrorist acts where, like, some guy sending bombs, like, you know, these bombers and other shit have been found so quickly because they have all their information. Unless you're, like, fucking Ted Kaczynski living in the house in the fucking middle of nowhere, you know, living off the grid and eschewing all of this modern technology, everything about you is pretty much known. If they need to know it, I mean, maybe they don't have it actively looking. Maybe someone's not actively looking at the Paul Parkey file or the fucking TJ or Scotty Kirk file. Or if they want to look at it, it's not hard to find. It's not hard to get.
I mean, we live in a time now where nobody has to look at it. Those things can be run through a fucking machine, and you can just be made part of a giant data point that tracks what people do. That's easily searchable to your name if they need to.
Yeah.
So it's all there to be seen as soon as they want to see it. Oh, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
We're past the time where there's got to be a fucking agent sitting on a stool listening to everybody's you know what I mean? That's never going to happen. But these machines, these computers, like, what do you think the outcropping is of computers getting faster, more compact, cheaper, better in architecture?
Yeah, I mean, part of the consequence, I'm certainly not the only consequence, but one of the consequences is, you know, a better and better fucking surveillance state to keep track, you know? And plus, I mean, like, you know, it can be used for anything. Like, it basically, like, oh, we want to know who's fomenting these political views that are dangerous to the fucking, you know, United States government and our control. We want to know who has these kind of politics, you know, and it's just, you know, they can, it's like, oh, we categorize you as you're part of this fucking group, you're part of that group. And it's just, you know, it's more of the fragmenting of society, more of the marginalization of society. They can make sure that, I mean, like, and, you know, a lot of times what this country does, especially, and I think this country is really good at it, is they'll just give people outlets that are meaningless. You know, it's like, oh, right, this person's a revolutionary. They have this revolutionary mindset. Be sure to fucking sell them the Che Guevara shirt. You know, be sure to sell them this image. Be sure to fucking push this movie at them, you know. And they just kind of fucking redirect things and just, you know, basically start, you know, manipulating people like puppets on fucking strings. Like, ooh, you're a fucking dangerous revolutionary, huh? Well, here's the T-shirt store for you, you know? Here's the kind of stuff you like based on this algorithm. Get complacent. Enjoy this content. You know, so they just redirect it. They give you, like, meaningless acts of rebellion. It's like, you know, they used to do this, at, like, on the high school level. Like, in order to fucking prevent, you know, students from having, like, actual, you know, meaningful rebellion against the authority structure of the fucking school and the teachers and stuff. They just create some meaningless rule that they don't really even give a shit about, like no hats, you know? So then, then when you know, instead of rebelling in a meaningful way, the rebel just fucking comes in with a hat on, like, oh, you can't tell me what to do. Take that, system.
And then they get suspended.
Yeah.
And they don't do it again. And life goes on. It's like they're preparing. Well, it's not even like that. They're preparing you for society in high school. And some of that is good, like a broader base of knowledge. That's a good thing.
Sure.
But some of that is, you know, to quote Bill Hicks here lightly, making drones. Or to quote fucking Carlin, obedient workers. It's like they're preparing you to live in a society where the rules don't have to make sense, where authority is ultimate and unquestionable, and where you have a very strict idea of what it is that you're supposed to do, and you adhere to that despite not wanting to, because, hey, you got to do it. That could be used to describe school, and that could be used as a broad description of what it's like to live in this country.
Right. I mean, if you look at all the people, and I mean, obviously this idea didn't catch on because Americans aren't quite indoctrinated enough yet. But there was a lot of people out there with the idea, and you still see them. They're still there. They're still making their voices known, who are like, you know, let's let a bunch of people die because the economy is more important than human life.
Of course.
And I mean, like, think about the level of indoctrination you have to reach to come to that conclusion where, like, literally you're willing to lay down your life for the good of the economy, you know, like where that's like considered a form of fucking patriotism, you know, like, and it's usually coming from the right, who of course are like always like, well, we're against this collectivist shit. This is, we're all rugged individuals. This is about the sweat of a man's brow and all that bullshit. But then this crisis, it brings out the fucking true nature, which is, you know, if I gotta die to fucking keep the economy going, I will. Because there's nothing more important than the economy. There's nothing more important than the ruling class.
Yeah, I guess it won't be dying, though. I mean, maybe a couple of them will. They'll be, oh, a couple rich fucks died, too. Look, we're all in this together. But the reality is that they're thinking about the peons. They're going, well, they can die. As long as I get my shit and I'm doing okay, they can die. What does it matter?
It's always been the mentality. The only fucking lives that conservatives have ever given a shit about in this country, as far as I can tell, is the unborn. They don't want them to die because I guess they want them, you know, they need them for the workforce or whatever the fuck the reason is behind the fake reason of religion. And then the other group of people they don't want to die is the people who actually want to die. You know, like people who are terminally ill, like, please let me end my suffering. It's like, no, keep living. No, you got to live.
Dude.
Everyone else, they're fine with dying.
I don't know. It's like one of the coping methods, and I'm not saying we have to stop having this fucking conversation because it is what it is. It's a conversation that needs to be had, but I'm just, to be honest about my personal position right now, one of the ways that I've coped with this whole insanity that's going on is to push these thoughts that I've always had in my head to the periphery and to not think about them and how they relate to our current situation.
Yeah.
And that sucks.
I'm in the same boat as you with that because, like, 99% of the day, I'm not really, this isn't what's on my mind. I'm watching movies. I'm cooking food. I'm having, you know, little sweet conversations with my wife, or I'm having, you know, whatever. I'm baking cookies. I'm doing that kind of stuff. But, like, at the end of the day, nitty gritty, you know, somewhere in the back of my mind, this stuff's there, broiling away.
And I gotta be honest with you. It's psychologically dangerous. Like, it really is. Like, even for a normally mentally healthy person.
Yeah.
This kind of thing, which I imagine a lot of us are doing, we have to.
I mean, I don't even know how you avoid it in this fucking circumstance.
People have to contextualize the reality they're living in. I mean, that's just that's how people cope with reality to begin with, is that, like, you know, we act like there's all these hard and fast rules. I mean, maybe the laws of physics or something. Sure. Those might be like, yep, here's gravity. Here's these other forces we can describe or understand. But I mean, a lot of stuff just boils down to how people feel about it, you know, their perception of the events that are occurring. You know, as far as the economic stuff, I mean, of course, there are people going to make an argument because they want to see the stock market go up. They don't care about human life. It's dollars and cents. It's, oh, I make more money if the economy is going. So it's, who cares?
Because for me, it's a denial of instinct in myself. And I, in some ways, I think for the betterment of the people that do have to be around me. Like, I know that the cycle of my endless thinking about this shit is going to be for me to turn to the only thing I can do. I'm not a strong dude. I can't go out in the fucking streets with a fucking truncheon. I just don't, you know, I'm physically not in great shape. That's not me. I can't do that. I can't be the dude with a gun. I can't be the dude out there making physical changes in the world. Or if I was, I would be way more ineffectual than your average fucking person. I can scream from the fucking hilltops, though. You know what I mean?
Right.
And be a constant drumbeat of all of the negativity that I see. And I you know what I mean? I don't know that that's the best thing to do right now.
I don't know that it, I mean, like, I feel like we've, I mean, you, me, Scotty, all of us to various extents have already been that for quite some time, long before, you know, this moment in history.
But why does
I don't know. I don't know that it's ever really produced a super positive result for any of us or for our society at large.
I mean, I don't know, dude. What's the alternative, though?
I mean, the alternative is super happy, fun time for monetization. You know what I mean? Like,
right. Which I've been working on a second part to that, and I got to tell you, it's so hard. Because I'm, you know, not to, I mean, I guess we can rip back the veil on it. That whole episode was kayfabe, obviously.
Right.
It's just a big, long running gag. And I'm finding it hard to think in funny terms now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's like, challenging.
I'm working on this episode and I'm trying to come up with little gags and little twists and little things. And I got some stuff done on it. It'll come out eventually.
Right.
But fuck, am I struggling in a way that, I gotta be honest, that last happy fun time thing, I put that together in fucking 30 minutes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was just, I pulled a bunch of quick stories and we all just kind of laughed our way through it, but I'm agonizing over this one.
Right. Well, it's hard. It's a, you know, because levity right now is something that you almost kind of have to.
It's because shit got, like, real.
Force, you know? You know?
Yeah. You know, and that's another thing too. I'm sorry, Scotty, to cut you off.
Go ahead.
In our last, one of the last pre-post shows, we talked about streaming and we made some critiques of streaming, but I'm going to be honest with you, dude, I'm putting the blame in the fucking wrong direction. Like, I'm going to give a fucking win to the trolls and the people that disrupt shit because they're not responsible for it. I am. Like, I'm the one that's not streaming. And the reason I'm not streaming is because I'm afraid it's going to devolve into what I feel this devolving into. And I don't want, like, as much as I've spent time being this negative voice from the top of the hill going, you know, everything's fucking going to shit. For some reason, it feels like a betrayal to be that now. You know what I mean? To me, I'm not trying to put right. this on anybody else.
No. Sure.
Because I know that people are assaulted, but I know that people are just as psychically disturbed by this as I am. And I don't want to add to it right now.
Right. I think, though, that, you know, and I don't know what kind of factoring in this has, if anything, but I do think that a lot of times when times get hard, people turn to the most pessimistic voice in the room because it's almost like that person is a little bit more used to it, I guess, or that person's already been thinking about this kind of thing before. So it's almost like, you know, tell me how to deal with this. Give me some insight into how I can exist in this state of being, you know?
Because I don't either.
No.
You know what I mean? I'm a fucking wreck. Like, yeah, I'm getting through it. I'm eating, you know, I got movies to watch. I'm sitting in an air conditioned room right now. So I'm luckier than some,
Yeah.
But I'm just as much of a fucking wreck as anybody out there. I got a mom that lives in an outbreak center of this shit that has a pre-existing lung condition.
Right.
My girlfriend's stepdad he had a lung transplant.
Right.
And he lives in Washington. You know what
another
I mean?
Epicenter.
And this is just, I have this little internet forum that I've been going to for years. It's about like 20 people now. And there's a big thread about COVID, of course.
Yeah.
And one of the questions that came up amongst this group of 20 fucking people was, hey, do you know anybody that's got it? And I racked my brain. And I was like, right now, I don't know of anybody that I've ever met that has this. Dude, like 10 people on this little forum either know or work with somebody that's been diagnosed with it. Some of them have family members that has it.
Right.
There's a dude on the forum who may or may not be right who thinks he had it. He doesn't have health care. So he had these symptoms of this pretty early on towards the outbreak. And he kind of just treated it like a flu. And he's one of the, you know, most that's how it is for most people that get it.
Yeah.
Right. Especially like in America.
Right. And he just suffered through it and his body fought it off. And that was that. You know what I mean?
You know, I mean, I think you deal with things the only way you can deal with them. I mean, like, we're all fallible. We all make mistakes. We all, you know, there's no playbook in life. There's no fucking player's guide. You can just consult and say, this is the right way to act during this time. I mean, we're living for our generation, unprecedented times. And I think, you know, maybe that's the way you deal with it, Paul, is that you're just like, you know what? I normally look at it this way. And the healthiest thing for me is to not look at it that way at this time or not be that voice or not be that person. And right. Sometimes that's how it's best to, you know, I think a lot of people with, you know, regulating emotions and thoughts, you know, especially, you know, like you seem like someone has like the negative kind of feedback loops you get into. And I mean, I know I've gotten into them plenty of times in my life. So it's like, you're just like, I don't want to be in that cycle. It's just, right. Because it feels like everyone's in that cycle. And if people are going to talk to me, I don't want it to be another voice going, the sky is falling, the sky is falling, the sky is falling. Like, I'd rather just either be a voice of like, let's chill or let's do something else or let's think about something else. Like, you know, it's like our flash fights have reflected that. I mean, obviously COVID-19, we discuss it, but at the same time, it's like, you know, that's everywhere. That's every person.
I'm questioning whether or not we should just start fucking covering it on Flash Ride. And it seems strange for me to be the voice of that, but it's just like, What I feel I should be doing is very conflicted right now.
Right.
It's really conflicted. And you know, I'm not trying to downplay anybody else's work problems and shit. We're very lucky to make our money the way that we do. And we're very lucky that we have. Like,
yeah. I mean, my lifestyle change has been fairly minimal compared to what a lot of people are doing.
And I want to recognize, too, that that's on the backs of the people that love and watch the show.
Absolutely.
100%.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, them.
Undeniable.
And right now, at this point in the crisis, it doesn't look like they're leaving, which is a huge thing.
Right.
So my question is, and it may seem silly, because we do a silly show that's oftentimes silly, but right now, more than ever, my question is, what's best for them? Because this is a time where there's danger everywhere.
Even danger
in deciding to talk about something.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean?
There's no, there's really no playbook for this shit. So,
and so that I'd be honest with you guys, as my fellow performers, I've been struggling with that since the beginning of this in a big fucking way. And it's caused what I believe to be, now I'm a normally negative person, but it's caused what I perceive to be, at least, a drop in quality on my part, on my performance. I'm not putting you guys in that.
Sure.
I'm just turning a critical eye inward because I'm so tentative about what I'm doing and what is it right for me to be like, fuck.
It's not, I think in terms of right, I think it's natural. Feel
right. I mean, look, I mean, because
we just talked about like how we're distracting ourselves through this. I'm watching movies. Do people really need me to be another one of those? Like, oh, I'll just turn my brain off, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like, well, it's kind of hard because we've always ridden a line, I think, between being serious and being funny here. And, you know, sometimes we do episodes that are pretty fucking serious, and sometimes we do episodes that are pretty fucking whimsical and funny. And I think that there's two different competing schools of thoughts in my brain anyway, where it's like, on one hand, should we do funny, lighthearted stuff that distracts from what's going on? Or should we fucking be, you know, more reflective of the times and, you know, let the, I mean, like, we are pessimist productions. I mean, this is a time of pessimism, but at the same time, you know, I want people to be entertained. I want people to have fun. I want people who watch this kind of stuff and listen to us talk and listen to us fucking gab about this shit to have an in, you know?
Right. You know what it reminds me of?
And plus, I mean, there's a sense, I think, of, you know, of responsibility right now, because, you know, when you have someone's ear, especially in a time like this, you know, everything you say, you realize, you know, it could have an impact on people's lives one way or the other. So you don't want to say something that's like maybe too cavalier that someone takes to heart and then it has, you know, negative repercussions down the line or something like that. You know, because, I mean, that certainly happened to me throughout the course of my fucking career.
I mean, yeah, we've all made mistakes. This reminds you of the in Hamlet, you know, this above all, to thine own self be true, and it must follow as the night the day. Thou cannot be false to any man. Farewell, my blessing, this in thee. You know, I mean, like, you have to be true to who you are. If, Paul, you feel that you had that drop, I mean, in your performance, I mean, you have to follow what you think is best. You know, there's not any sort of right or wrong. I think it's what it, you know, we're acting as if we can evaluate the decisions before we make them. And, or is this the correct decision to make?
It's an,
we can only react to what we see and what we do in the world. You know, there's no agency above us telling us, oh, guys, make a more serious episode. Oh, make it more, you know, our responsibility is to make the content, to make sure that we're doing what we have promised people, and they judge what we do. We can't judge it beforehand and say, oh, well, I think this is what people need. We can't be the arbiters of that. We can only simply do what we can do.
Right. But I want to consider it. You know what I mean? Like, I want to try and at least let that feed my decision, because, you know, there are people out there that can listen to us pessimistically rant about shit like this forever, and it's not really going to displace them in their lives. But there are a lot of people out. I'm one of them, dude. I'm sitting here doing this show on the verge of a panic attack. My palms are sweaty. My heart rate is elevated. My breathing is fucking, you know what I mean? I know what a panic attack feels like.
Me too. I know. Yeah.
Because ultimately, I don't know. Like, that's another thing that I wrestle with in this is who the fuck, what have I ever done to make me an authority on this shit?
Nothing.
Nothing.
I mean, the only thing any of us have done to be an authority is to speak loudly enough and lucidly enough that some people have resonated with it. But, you know, I mean, I feel like a lot of, you know, a lot of what I do, at least, I guess I won't speak for either of you, is I'm trying to put my voice out there, you know, and just, I pretty much tell you, I'm not trying to put on airs like I'm some fucking something I'm not. I'm TJ. These are my opinions. This is what I think. You can agree. You can disagree. But at the end of the day, that's just what I am and who I am. And some people resonate with it. Some people think I'm fucking awesome. Some people think I'm a fucking moron, and every opinion in between. Sure. And that's just all I could fucking do. I can't, but I don't ever fucking go out there and present myself as an authority. To the extent to which I am an authority on anything is the extent to which people have the belief that I am.
You know, and Paul, I'll say this, you know, I think that, you know, this situation you're in, you're thinking, oh, being this way is a detriment. But I think you're voicing what a lot of people are concerned about. It's not necessarily about COVID-19, but just the anxiety, the stress,
right.
In the country, even in the best of times, our mental health is not taken seriously. And that's something that the last years of my life, I've totally woken up to, is that people don't really consider that. They don't consider, like, oh, it's people talk about the economy. It's like, what about the mental strain? This has been on so many people, not just staying inside, but the reflectiveness that gives you, that clarity that gives you of, like, what is important in life?
Right.
What really matters?
And to me, when it comes to that shit, I want to be, at least personally, so fucking careful, but I don't know how to be careful at this time. Like, I don't know if it's better to have me doing shows like this and talking like this and just being open and honest about all the fucking horror in the world is the right thing to do. I don't know if using my facility to maybe make people laugh and do funny shit is the right thing to do. Because maybe part of the problem is there's too much distraction for us right now. There's too much Netflix and nobody's really thinking about this. You know what I mean? And do I want to be just another one of those?
Right. But on the other hand, do you really have the answers either?
No, I don't. Well, I just said.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know what's correct.
I mean, look, I would say, you know, that people want to be entertained. But at the same time, like, the shit you're going through is probably not unique to you. So I think that, you know, when you put yourself out there in an honest way and speak the fucking, you know, speak your heart, speak your mind, that's what's going to resonate with people, because I guarantee you're not the only one who feels the way you do.
No. I mean,
I'm sorry, Scotty. Go ahead.
I think a lot of times, you know, people say, oh, Paul's paranoid or people are paranoid, but this is a time where it's justified. You know, I think the hardest conception is that people believe that when Paul or other people are saying these things, that they want that to be the case. It's not that they want that to be the case, is that they're warning everyone. It's a warning. And then when you see something like that's come to pass, which is just an extraordinary event, I mean, it's emotionally damaging, because in a way you might feel some responsibility for what's happened, even if it's justified or not. You feel like, oh shit, I've been saying bad shit's going to happen. Now it's happening. That's a big weight to put on yourself. And I think a lot of stuff, you know, like this, Paul, is you're putting on yourself. You know, you're putting yourself as responsible. Like, every action you do, you're putting this through these like several layers of like, am I doing the right thing? Is this damaging? Is this hurtful? Is this going to hurt somebody? Is this going to make someone die? I mean, I don't know.
Right. Right. Is this going to take somebody who's already mentally fragile and make them feel worse for days on end? You know what I mean? Like, that's a consideration that I make, because I'm that type of person.
Yeah.
Right. And there's like, obviously a lot more.
I know I'm not alone. When we do these meetups and shit.
Yeah.
You know how many, and I know you guys get the same shit.
Right.
For your proclivities and the way that you are, you find these kind of kindred souls out there that really identify with you on some level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the one that I hear most often, quietly, after they've taken a selfie with me or whatever, is, man, you know, I just really, you know, I struggle with mental illness, and hearing somebody talk about it, you know, and seeing you like function with it and all that stuff, it really helps, you know, some variation of that.
Yeah.
And it's just like, holy fuck, because this is something like, yeah, we can overthink this, and maybe that's what I'm doing. But this is something that is particular to our line of work. It's a kind of stress and consideration that most people don't have to go through. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Most people's jobs don't have other people's opinions and hopes and dreams hanging on them to some extent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most, I mean, you know, to some extent, you know, I mean, there's definitely, you got to factor in that there's people along for the ride. There's people that are like I can't tell you how many times I go to a fucking meetup or something like that, and it's like, you know, I've been watching you since the fucking beginning. You know how fucking small of a group that is of people who've been watching me since the beginning, but there's tons of them. You know, and it's like, right. there is a fucking group of fucking people out there who are just fucking, at this point, loyal to, like, I am always 100% with you. I'm with your journey. I'm fucking along for the ride. And you know, if you fucking come out here and you do this and you fucking really fucking put yourself out there in an honest fucking way, there's going to be those people that you're going to resonate with. That are going to feel a sort of like strong emotional sort of kinship with you. And, you know, right now, obviously, there's a tremendous amount of vulnerability out there in the world. So, I mean, it does feel a bit like a burden to look at that responsibility of, like, you know, how do I guide people through this? To what extent is that my job at this point?
Right. And if that is there, because there are multiple ways of doing that. Like, if that is my job, if that is what I should be doing, what form should that take? You know what I mean? Like, what, Because none of us are experts on shit like this. So our voices are that of opinion.
Right.
And the broader social context, maybe.
Yeah.
But how do you deliver that? I don't know, man. It's just something I've been struggling with. I don't know that there is an answer. The answer is I've got to go forward like everybody else the best way I know how. But I've been really struggling to get in touch with what that is. You know, because I got to be honest with you, that loyalty that you talked about, I feel that the same way towards them. Like I know what position they hold in my life. As much as I may shit talk our audience, as much as I may engage in that kind of banter with them, ultimately, they're incredibly loyal, and I feel that same sense of loyalty to them. And I want to put on a good show for them, always. And what that is at this point in time is up in the air. Like, how do you put on a good show at a time like this? What is a good show at a time like this? Is it okay to just be background radiation for these people? Another binge of Seinfeld or
right
movie night or whatever the fuck? 6 hours with a video game that you've played, you know, whatever your flavor. Do people need another lollipop in the big bundle of lollipops?
Well, hopefully some of the people watching this, maybe they can give some feedback. I mean, we're having a pretty fucking real conversation right now, so I would hope that the people watching this and it would maybe take a break from, you know, their usual sort of light, airy comments to fucking engage with this in a real way and let us know, like, what...
I know what they're going to say.
What even do you expect? I mean, I think we're going to hear a lot of different opinions, but go ahead.
Like, diversity of life, you're in a diversity of opinions. You know, there is no... Life is not like stone. It's water. It flows in all these different directions.
Whoa, and, Scotty's know, going I, all I Confucius all on this
It's
shit,
not man. Mine. I mean, because it's not that I don't feel some agency or incumbent. Like, hey, you know what? What my responsibility, I feel, is that when people started watching us or supporting our Patreon or whatever the fuck it is they just want to hear us do a show. And that's my goal. My goal is to make the show. I mean, do I have any aspirations beyond that or any knowledge beyond that? I can't possibly know that. I can't possibly know once I put it out into the world, what people are going to do with this content. The only thing I know I can do for certain is to make the content and think about different concepts and ideas that interest me and what I'm passionate about and bring that, you know? I think we all have self-doubt about the things we do. I've doubted episodes I've done. I've regretted episodes I've done. I've regretted things I've said. No, that was stupid of me to say that. That made no fucking sense. What the hell was I fucking thinking when I said that? But I think beyond that, I just feel like I'm just another person. I'm just another piece of driftwood in the fucking sea. You know, I mean, it's not like I have I'm anything special where like, oh, I have this insight here. I mean, I wish I did. I wish I could fucking be a beacon to fucking help people. I mean, if there's anything I wish I could do more is just to help others. And, you know, if this gives some people some small measure of comfort in a sea of shit, then so be it. If that's the best I can do. I just hope I don't do any harm in it. I don't think I'm trying to do that, but could I do it inadvertently? Sure. I'm sure I could be capable of a number of things, just like anyone else is capable of them.
I agree. But, hey, Paul, you were starting to talk about what you think the chat, not the chat, but the people will say.
I mean, I think there'll be outliers and shit, but I think the general sentiment is going to be yourself, talk about whatever you want. You know, we need, you know, right. The general sentiment is going to be positive towards us. Just,
I guess, but it's kind of hard to expect them to feel the weight. You know what I mean? Because it's not.
Well, it's different for them.
Right. Because they can, you know, I mean, not to fucking. I don't want to put us up on some kind of fucking pedestal here, but I mean, the reality is that
they can't feel the weight of ours.
Right. I mean, you know, when they speak, you know, they might be speaking to them. I mean, I'm sure that there's a circle of people that fucking take their voice seriously and all that stuff. But like the larger that voice gets, the bigger that responsibility gets. And I mean, for some people, that responsibility is weightless because they don't fucking feel any sort of like, they're just like, whatever. The audience is just a thing to exploit. I don't think that we feel that way, and I'm not going to fucking specifically name anyone who I think does feel that way because I'm not here to start shit with anybody, but I think there's a lot of fucking people out there on this platform that, you know, they could give a fuck less about their audience as anything other than fucking pay pigs. Yeah. And, you know, of course, we joke about the fucking audience in those terms. But, I mean, I think that at the end of the day, we fucking really care about our audience.
We've met plenty of audience.
Yeah, we like fucking, meetups. I mean, when we do a meetup, there's not like,
there's a real person.
We don't do these fucking meetups where it's like, you know, you come and wait in a line and then you can maybe touch one of us. Like, we fucking get out there and mingle with the fucking people and have real fucking conversations and fucking, you know, keep it fucking real and all that bullshit. So, I mean, that's how we fucking do it. That's how we always will.
I took like 15 people that came to the show to Cafe Du Monde. Just to give you an example, you and Paul Wisely bailed.
Yeah, I was like, fuck that. But, you know,
to function. And Paul, but actually, no, you were too fucked up. Paul, you were wise, and you bailed.
Yep, I was like, this sounds like it's going to be a clusterfuck. But that's, yeah. You know, that's one of us that did that. We took an entire group of people out and just sat and drank beers at a weird bar. We did a whole fucking meetup where the whole idea was to eat a hamburger that we had learned about.
Right. We just went to a fucking burger joint in the middle of fucking bumfuck ass nowhere.
And it was just, you know what I mean? Like, but I do. Like, I feel an intense sense of loyalty to them. And I'm a naturally overly critical person, too. So I'm destined to overthink what it is that I do. And it's just a consideration that I feel it has to be made. You know, I feel like some people might think we're putting ourselves up on some kind of giant fucking pedestal here and trying to make out like, you know, what we're overplaying the struggle. Look, I know where I sit. You know, I'm a middling internet entertainer. I don't have a gigantic fucking audience, but I do better than most people in this fucking game. Your average person that has a podcast doesn't have one that reaches as many people as I do.
Right. And let's be real here. I mean, like, if you wanted to, you could have a gigantically larger fucking audience than you do now. I mean, because, I mean, we saw the trajectory of fucking Cinema for Cynics, I mean, at one point, you know?
Sure.
So, I mean, like, you know, I mean, you have as much as, like, you're doing better than most people already, but, I mean, I think you could be even bigger, you know, if you'd gone down, like, a different path, but, you know.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, look, dude, everything is limited by, you know, who I am and how I deal with things. And this is an outcropping of that. It's like, I don't know, man. Once again, I find myself in a position where it's like, I don't know. I don't know what the best way forward is. I don't know what the answer is. I want to make people feel good. I know that much. I want to try and help people to the limited extent that I can. And what form that takes, I guess I'll just have to suss out for my fucking self. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think there's a right answer. I don't think there's...
Well, you got to go on the Paul journey. You know, I mean, however long it takes, or maybe you never have the answer. Who fuck knows? That's how life goes, you know? Like, you're always going to see it as like, oh, man, you know, I'll figure these things out. Not every mystery in life gets fucking solved. I mean... You might just have to learn to live with the fact that you don't have an answer.
Oh, yeah.
Sweet.
There's not always an answer. And in this case, I think there's almost certainly not. All right. Well, that's I guess that's probably a show.
I pulled up a list of box office bombs, but the direction didn't go in that direction.
Well, segue seamlessly into list of box office bombs.
I was like, yeah, let's talk about some movie stuff. It went in a totally different direction. But, yeah, you know,
we usually do these sort of more free-form kind of discussions. Usually they don't get quite so heavy as this, but sometimes they do. It's called The Grease Trap. We do these twice a week for 30 minutes a pop. It's like a shorter version of a banter-sode. We do them Mondays and Fridays as pre-shows or sometimes post-shows. That's why they used to be called the pre-post show. They come out every week, 30 minutes a piece, two times. So basically an hour of content every week. Those are for our $10 patrons. But, you know, even if you don't want to go all the way to the $10 level, there's still a lot of cool shit for the $5 level as well. And, you know, you can sign up for that Patreon. You get the Friday shows. You get the second half of every episode of Flash Fried. And you get all kinds of other little bonus content, like we do some either movie commentaries or movie reviews. And a bunch of other stuff coming your way all the time. I do some like little private streams usually every month. I do an episode of Abandoned Hope exclusively for the patrons. It usually at least once a month, although I'll be honest, missed a month here and there. But usually I do it. We got
other stuff even in the works right now. Yeah. I mean, some of it got delayed because of the stupid ass coronavirus, but some of it's still going to move forward. You guys are just going to have to stay tuned.
Yeah, so everybody check that out, as usual. And, you know, stay safe out there and all that fucking shit. And, you know, thank you guys for tuning in. See you next time with another episode of Deep Facts.